I'm thrilled to say that this series of Beyond the Bathroom is sponsored by Skin & Me, the subscription skincare service tailored to provide what your skin needs. Make sure to keep listening for a discount code you won't want to miss. That's for later in the episode. Now on with the show. Hi, I'm Sally Hughes and this is Beyond the Bathroom, where each week I chat to my guests about their relationships with their own appearance. In Beyond the Bathroom, I attempt to get under the skin of my guests' beauty routines and rituals and hope to find out exactly what they see when they look in the mirror. How has their past affected the way they see themselves now? When did they look and feel their best? And how has their relationship with face and body shifted as life has ebbed and flowed? And Jo joins us remotely this week. This week's guest is Jo Malone, CBE, entrepreneur, former facial therapist, breast cancer survivor, and founder of the eponymous fine fragrance brand, which went from cottage industry side hustle to billion-dollar global icon, Jo Malone London. Having sold the business to Estée Lauder Companies in 1999 and exited 7 years later, Jo returned in 2011, applying her business canny and obsession with perfumery to Jo Loves, a passion project that quickly became a credible, much-loved fragrance house in its own right. But today, I'm interested in cutting through the delicious fug of perfume and sniffing out the woman herself. From where did this dogged determination to beautify women stem? And what, in the midst of poverty, world domination, serious illness, and a career comeback, in that order, did this extraordinary woman see in her own reflection? Jo Malone, welcome.
Thank you for inviting me.
I'm really, really, really happy that you're here. So much to ask you, so many things I want to ask you. Can we start by going way back, as far as you can remember, really? When did you first become aware of faces, your own face, let's say, before you went into the beauty industry?
Well, I grew up with beauty all the way around me. So my mum was a beautician. She'd started with Revlon as a manicurist. And then she went to work for this incredible woman called the Countess Labati. She was this amazing, incredible woman, sort of 6'2", blonde hair in her 80s, blood red lipstick. And what always amuses me was her real name was Doris Hilda Baker. But she had married a count, so she was perfectly entitled to use the title. But she was this amazing facialist. And so my mum would take me to work and I would spend hours and hours in the laboratory with, we used to call her madam, not the naughty sort of madam, the good sort of madam. And I would make face creams with her. So that's where, you know, I suppose if your mum is a good cook or your grandmother, you end up spending lots of time in the kitchen. And mine was in a laboratory making cosmetics.
So what does that look like? How old are you talking about for you at that point where you're playing around in the laboratory and making creams and potions? How old are you?
I was 7 when I made my first. I wasn't allowed to play around. It was she was really strict, mm-hmm. and rightly so. But she taught me. I was quite a loner when I was a little girl as well. I loved books. I loved reading. Although I struggled tremendously, but she was just this incredible woman. And she was full of stories, I can't tell you, that would make my eyes go like dinner plates. I can still remember all the stories today as though they, you know, happened yesterday. And she and I would trot off down Marylebone High Street to a little tea shop, and we'd sit and have tea. And then I noticed one day, I must have been about 9, and she couldn't remember how to get home. And I could see this panic. And of course, dementia was setting in. And it was so sad. And I said, "Don't worry, madam, I know the way home." And I took her home, and from then she deteriorated. And she was like one of my best friends. And I still feel her presence in, if I smell camphor oil, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. or a particular Bulgarian rose oil, it's as though she's standing in the room.
I love that. I can hear all these years later, I can hear the excitement in your voice about being in the thick of it and being surrounded by product. What did you think about the sort of effects of product at that point? Would you enjoy seeing the transformation in client skins and so on when you were a little girl? Could you tell the difference?
Absolutely. So when I first started working, I was allowed to massage people's feet. That was how I started. I wasn't even allowed above the knee for a good couple of years. And I had amazing training. But I then had this gentleman that came to show me about massage movements, and he was blind. And he would know if my eyes were open.
Wow.
And he taught me, he said, "Close your eyes And when you massage, feel the movement and visualize it. And to be honest, that is how I learned between my mum, Madame Labati, and I can't remember this man's name. It was such a long time ago, although I visually can see him. But he, you know, he taught me pressure, how to use your hand and the pressure points in your hand, how to use your fingertips. So very much, I suppose, like reflexology, you know, finding the pressure points in the face, being able to drain edema or fluid from the face quite easily. And when I was very young, I did the work before plastic surgery and afterwards, and I worked with a man called Dr. Freddie Nicole. Mm-hmm. And so I learned a lot about how the face heals, the importance of keeping it clean and moisturized. And that is the key. I mean, the anti-aging really is all about keeping moisture in your skin and keeping the circulation.
I'm wondering how it made you feel at such a young age to be the direct influence on women feeling different, looking different. How did that make you feel? I would imagine that was quite a powerful feeling.
Oh, Sally, what a lovely question. I don't think anyone's asked me that. To this day, I love people feeling good about themselves. Yeah. You know, if I see a complete stranger and I think they look wonderful, I will go up and tell you to them. It makes me happy.
Yeah.
I think anything to do with face creams, cosmetics, it's kind of, you know, we need to share good news more and more with others. And sometimes it's not the most expensive. It can be the most simple kind of product that you put on your face. I mean, for instance, the yogurt face mask, which costs under £1. Yeah. And it's one of the best face masks. And it's in the recipes in the back of my book. And I shared it because anyone can make it. And it's probably one of the best face masks. Mm-hmm. I still do. I still love the thought that I make people either look good or sort of feeling good about themselves. I think it's a great thing to do.
And how did you yourself feel about your appearance? Did you think you were pretty growing up, did you feel unpretty, or were you just focused on the appearance of others?
Ooh, I've never thought of myself as pretty, if I'm really honest, and that's not doing myself down. I think I've got good attributes and good things. I had very long hair when I was young, so that was my kind of that was my thing, and I had right down to my bottom, and then I cut it all off at the age of about 15, 16 and regretted it, and I've had kind of short hair ever since. I never went sort of longer, but I didn't think I was particularly pretty. I was bullied at school as well, and I never knew why. And of course, I was also dyslexic, so I always felt like I was running behind. I was never as smart as other people. I could get to a destination if you gave me a problem to solve. I could solve it probably faster than the teacher. But actual academics and exams and everything, I used to feel bottom of the pile the whole time. And I think when you lose that confidence, you lose that confidence in the way you look as well.
That's really interesting. I think that's true. You mentioned you don't know why the bullies bullied you, but that's always the answer, isn't it? There is no reason in particular. And so even the bullying of you, I'm sure, was completely irrational, not really based on anything in particular. Was your appearance used against you in the language used?
No, I don't think so. I don't know why. I haven't really analysed it, if I'm really honest. And it happened such a long time. I was definitely the loner.
Yeah.
And I had a tough kind of family childhood as well. So I didn't feel, you know, sometimes children go to school and it's a relief for them. It's a place where they go, where they can forget. For me, it wasn't. My home was a bit of a struggle and school was really a struggle. And I think that's probably why I completely fell through the cracks of the educational system. And I just wandered away, if you know what I mean. There wasn't this big sort of you know, social services did come round, but they didn't pick up on it. And I didn't go to school for about a year, I think, and nobody came round. Nobody said, where is Joe? Or I just kind of disappeared.
Tell me what was difficult about home life for those who haven't heard you talk about this before. It's so interesting.
Well, I had a really great mum and dad. That wasn't it. It was just the same as a lot of families. There wasn't a lot of money. Yeah. There was, and I had two very creative parents. My mum obviously was in the beauty industry. My father was a member of the Magic Circle, a magician. Mm-hmm. He was an architect, an artist, and he was also a huge gambler. To this day, I wouldn't change a thing. They did the very best they could, but there was never enough money. We were always scrabbling to find. We used to have gas and electric meters under the stairs where you used to have to put 2 shillings. And I would hide coins So I knew that if we came home from school, that there would at least be electric or gas. And there was never enough food. There was never enough food in the fridge. And it was up to me from the age of 11 to make sure there was always the next meal. So I have this thing in my life now, which I know is crazy. I always have three meals in our fridge just in case something went wrong. Always a tin of beans, always six eggs, loaf of bread, you know, things that I can make a meal from. And that comes from my childhood. So it was an eclectic childhood. As a child, I would do the markets with my father, and I would go and I would be the one that had to sell the watercolor paintings. I would also be the magician's assistant. So when he would go and do magic shows, I would go look after the rabbits and would make sure that the next trick kind of was ready. And then, which is very strange when I say this now, I would also go with him to his poker games. And I could read from the age of 11, I could read marked cards. Yeah. So I would signal to him what everyone had in their hands. And when I look back on it, I think, oh my goodness, you know, most people today would say, how shocking and awful. It wasn't. I was never unsafe. I was never, I used to wander around the markets. Everybody knew Joe, everybody. And that's where I learned a lot of the storytelling. And I loved being in that atmosphere, watching people selling something, telling their story. Yeah, my dad taught me to be a great storyteller. Don't regret a thing.
So hearing you talk about that, what really, really strikes me is your mother was in the beauty industry and touching faces, touching people's skin, mixing up lotions, and all the stuff you're talking about with your father and the magic circle and being his assistant and so on. It's so funny to me because what happens when you cross beauty with theatre, you get perfumery, right? Yes. And so I think it's quite interesting that that's where you ended up. You didn't go straight there. So let's talk about when you yourself as your own entity became a facial therapist and how that came about and what your philosophy was.
Well, I started off, I was newly married. Gary and I were, I was 21 when I got married and he was 23. So we were these young, newly married couple. And I said to him, I really want to start my own business. And so we had just enough money to scrape together a month's rent in a little tiny apartment. And when we walked in, it was sort of like, it looked like a student digs. It really did. And the woman that was showing me around said, I need 3 months' rent and money put down in case anything goes wrong. And I said, I really don't have that kind of money. I promise you I'll never be late with my rent. Give me a chance. And she did. That woman's name was Sandra French. And she is very much part of one of those women that gave me a chance. And yeah. I set up a tiny little face clinic in there. We didn't have any money for furniture, so we slept on a piece of blue foam. But I started off with about 10 clients, and then I went to 50 to 100. And then my books were closed within 2 years where I couldn't see anybody else. But I looked after everybody from royalty to film stars to, you know, the woman that worked in Marks and Spencer's and came every 6 weeks to see me to family. I mean, just everybody. It just grew from there. That love of skincare, which actually everybody wants to know about the fragrance and the business. And the skincare is like one of those really great loves that's still within yeah. me. And it's nice to talk about skincare and to reminisce about that part of my life that brought me to where I am today.
And so you're in your facial clinic and then something serendipitous happens, doesn't it? In terms of fragrance and what is to happen to you and what you're to do with your life thereafter. Tell me about that.
I always knew that I loved the sense of smell, and I knew I had, by that point, I knew that my sense of smell was not like everybody else. And I used to make little body lotions.
But stop. Tell me about that. I can't let that go. Tell me about that. Why was your sense of smell? Why did you have that feeling that your sense of smell was not like anybody else's? I need to know more there.
Because I would say I would know when it was going to rain. I could smell if an oil, if I was making a cosmetic, I could smell if an oil was, you know, 2 degrees hotter than it should be. I could smell things like the stems of flowers, if they were old flowers or new. I mean, I could smell if the dog was going to be sick. I could smell just things that not necessarily luxury, but no one else could smell yeah. them. And so I knew I had something. And when I was blending kind of fragrance oils, I would have this just instinct. I knew what I was doing, although I didn't know what I was doing technically. I knew what I was doing creatively in my imagination, and it worked every time. So I knew there was something amazing, and I would make up these body lotions and put, you know, really strange ingredients together. And then in the facial, I would massage people's arms. And eventually I made a little bath oil, and I would give it as a gift to everyone that came when they had their facials. And one day one woman said, "This is the most amazing product I've ever used. Can I buy 100 bottles?" And that was the crossroads. That was the turning point.
And what was that smell?
In the very beginning, she bought a whole kind of different, whole lot of different smells. But the first body lotion was nutmeg and ginger.
Yeah, beautiful. I love so warming, kind of spicy smells. Delicious. So that was your moment, wasn't it? You know, those moments come along in life. I always think, you know, luck is such an under-recognized, underrated thing. Everything good is a combination of luck and exploiting that good luck by sort of hammering your hard work at it. And did you immediately have the confidence to go, yeah, do you know what? I can do this. I can turn it into something.
No, I didn't think that. I didn't think that at the time. I just knew that I'd be able to pay my rent at the end of the month, because 100 bottles meant we didn't have to struggle. And Gary and I, at the end of the month, if it was good, we'd get a takeaway Chinese. And all I could think about was, oh, God, we can get a takeaway Chinese, have a glass of wine. But it was all being made in my kitchen with four plastic jugs. So we made the order and off it went. But it was at that point that it exploded and everybody wanted to buy the product. It became just like the coolest thing. And so my little apartment constantly was filled with people coming up and down the stairs, but buying like 20, 30 at a time. Nobody bought one bottle or two.
She must have been quite an influential woman, was she, if it caught fire from there?
She was, yeah. She chooses to remain anonymous, and I've always respected that.
Of course, sure. So people noticed the smell on her, I guess, and said, oh, where's that from?
She just loved it, and she bought it and gave it away as a gift. And, I'm eternally grateful for that, because it was that moment where you create something, and it's happened to me like lots of times in my life, and something happens and you feel your feet leave the ground.
Yes.
And you think to yourself, okay, I've either got to run with this. And so to be honest, I've very rarely been afraid in business of those moments, or even when, you know, tough times come, because they do, and you just have to push through it. And you have to, you know, find a way. And then I always believe that there's an adventure the other side. Always an adventure every single day if you want to find it.
I think lots of people who are as hardworking, as industrious and all of those things lack that fearlessness. And that can be the difference between making or breaking, can't it? Where do you think that comes from?
Well, when I was young, it was called naivety. So I didn't know half the things that happened would take us to where they have in life. Now, when I'm older, I just think that I'd rather try and fail than, and I'm not frightened of failure either. And I think that that's probably a huge part of where that fearlessness comes. Because often when you confront something, you realize that fear is not what it is. It's not real. It's only in your head. And yes, we can fail. And yes, we can, but we can also succeed. And is that, do you know that lovely quote where it says, if you knew you couldn't fail, what would you attempt to do today? And I choose to get up in the morning, even though all the things that have happened to me in my life, and some of them way out of my control, I always chose to believe that I would survive it, that I would come through, and against the odds. And I've never believed other people's opinions of me should dictate my life. I believe my own dreams and opinions and who I want to be should dictate my life. So I think that's been with me. And as I've got older, I've become more and more determined. But of course, the more successful you become, the higher you fall. So, you know, there's always that jeopardy. But that's life. That's, if you want to sit in a nice, safe environment for the rest of your life and never take a chance, then that's your life. That's your choice. I personally don't.
Tell me what your self-care looked like during that time, because one thing we do know about setting up a brand, setting up a business, is it's a lot of work. You're already working hard and suddenly you have this side hustle that's taking on a life of its own. How were you looking after yourself at that time? Are you somebody who can still prioritize yourself in those moments, or do you just fall by the wayside and make sure family and business are taken care of?
No, to me, I live in the moment, and I live very much. And we've raised a family. I mean, my son's now at university, so it's a different way, but a way of life. But we have always been a family that's been a family business. Our family always comes first. And to this day, I don't want phones at the table. When we sit at a table and we have dinner together, we talk and we laugh and we share stories. And when people come in, they love the atmosphere. Why? Because we live in the moment. But when you're in business, you have to live in the moment as well. And you have to make sure. So I'm very disciplined. I'm a big list maker. I like everything done. And in my list book, if things are in thick pen, they have to be done today. If they're in thin, I can carry them over to the following day. So, and I, on my list will be everything from business meetings, new product development, PR, podcasts, to have to go to the butcher's and get 3 chicken breasts. You know, everything goes on there. Absolutely everything from I've got to dye my eyebrows, I've got to do this, that. And I've always been someone that believes I don't mean getting dressed up in the evening, but when we go out for dinner or we come home, I always go and put some makeup on or some fragrance on and a little bit of lip gloss, put my, you know, something, change into something. I kind of love enjoying the moment and looking my best for even if we're just sitting down having cheese on toast. I mean, I'm not talking about full makeup, by the way. I'm just sure, you know what I mean? Just freshening up and just thinking to yourself, I'm going to have a glass of wine, sit with my husband, have a chat, have dinner. And I love that. I love making the most of what we have.
That's interesting. So you still enjoy the rituals of beauty in your own life. You still like that moment.
I'm going to have a morning by myself in London and I will get up. I will do a face mask. I'm going to dye my eyebrows because I love my eyebrows being lovely and dark. I'll do a hair mask. And so I'll have a little spa morning all to myself. I'll put some jazz music on. I'll have a lovely cup of coffee. I'll do my feet. I do a foot mask and I will just spend that time. And I love it. I absolutely love it. And I love extremities like manicures and pedicures. I think keeping those things are important. I mean, they're not the most important thing in life. Of course they're not, but it makes me feel great. And, you know, when my toes are nicely painted and my hands are nicely done, I just feel like I've made the best of myself. You know what I mean? Don't you feel that?
I absolutely do feel that. But also I feel like I now want to just come round and spend the morning at yours tomorrow.
Well, it's going to be a happen. I'm going to walk my dog and just do the things that I love. I'll do some smelling. And I multitask. So I will have at one point, I will have the mask on my face, my eyebrows on, my feet in Ziploc bags with the cream on my feet. Not a pretty sight.
Yes.
Not a pretty sight, I have to say, Sally. But
it works though.
Yeah, no one sees that bit.
Are you? Well, that's a good point. That's a good point. Are you a door locker?
Never locked. I have never locked my bathroom door, but I don't think anyone's burst in. I mean, if I'm in the bath, my husband will kind of wander in and out, or I don't know if he's brushing his teeth or something, but none of us have bathroom lockers at all.
Oh, that's, I admire your inhibition. I'm definitely a door locker, but I think actually it's a sort of hangover of having kind of small children and when they were playing with their dad or their stepdad, locking the door meant that I could just know that nobody was going to like charge in saying, is my t-shirt clean, or where are my trainers? So it's more that, it's more so I'm not disturbed more than kind of any physical inhibition, I suppose.
What's quite funny is the dog sits outside the door. So if the dog is out at the door,
yes,
everyone knows
that
I'm in there and they're not going to burst in. So
I know exactly how that goes. And when they're little and they just follow you around the house, don't they? Dogs, little puppies have to come for a wee with you so that they know you're still safely with them. Let's go back to when the business was really, really, really thriving. Fast forward a few years, the business is now an icon. It's been in every glossy magazine. It's now a really famous luxury brand. Everybody wants a piece of Jo Malone London for Christmas, for anniversaries, for birthdays. You are riding high. And something huge and life-changing happens to you, which happens to very, very many women, which is you are diagnosed with breast cancer. Talk me through that. Tell me how that felt and what that did.
Before that happened, we sold to Estée Lauder. So we sold our business.
Yeah.
And I think that's an important part because it makes the rest of the story kind of relevant. So we'd by that point, within 5 years, we'd sold the biggest cosmetic giant in the world. I thought, Gary and I, for the first time in our marriage, we had a bed, went to sleep in a proper bed with four legs. And it was, it, you know, it was amazing. And I just had Josh. I was a young mum.
How old were you, Jo, at this time?
I was 38 years old. And I had suffered with hyperemesis through the whole of 9 months. So I was 7 stone 2 when I had Josh. And when he popped out, It was the first time in 9 months I didn't feel sick. It was horrendous.
Right.
And a lot of women who actually suffer with that, it is the worst sickness you can possibly imagine.
Hideous, and, yeah.
But within a year, I was feeling so tired all the time and unusually tired. And one morning I was in New York and I found a lump in my breast, but it was a moving lump and it wasn't painful. Came home, went to the doctors, and he took one look at it and he said, "Let's get it scanned. Please don't worry. You know, I'm sure it's nothing to worry about," but it was. And I went down to the hospital, had it scanned, and I could see by the look in the nurse's eyes, she said, "I'm just going to get a doctor to come and have a look." And I thought, oh my God, I didn't think it was cancer, but I knew it was bad news. And then that evening I was diagnosed, and they'd done some scans and they could see that it wasn't smooth edges. And they said, "We know this is breast cancer." They knew it. And then I had some tests done. And it was confirmed that I had a very aggressive form of breast cancer. And I remember this doctor saying to me, "You need to get your life in order." And suddenly, everything I had in one hand, you know, selling to Lauder and having this great life and my beautiful husband and son, it was just gone. It was as though someone snatched it from my hand. And I remember sitting there thinking, I said, "Am I going to die?" And he said, "There is a strong possibility, yes." And it was, when I look back on that now, I think, why did you say that to me? You know, it was a strange thing. The whole thing was bizarre. Anyway, I came home and I sat and I sobbed and I looked at my son and I just thought, oh my God, I'm never going to see you grow up. And it was, and then I suddenly found this strength within me. And I thought, Joe, you've never listened to anybody in your life, who you should be, what you should do. Where, you know, you didn't go to school, you didn't do this. Why are you going to let someone tell you when you're going to die? Get up and fight. And that's what I did. I picked up the phone, spoke to the most amazing woman called the late Evelyn Lauder, and flew to New York within 3 days. And I was went straight into the Sloan Kettering, was operated on. And for 6 months, the news got worse and worse and worse each day. I went from a lumpectomy to a mastectomy to... And, you know, every time I went to the hospital, there was another piece of bad news, and finished my chemo, then had to do it all over again, then got to the end of the chemo, they found something in the other breast, so I had to go through the whole thing again, until one day I woke up and my gorgeous doctor, Dr. Larry Norton, who saved my life, walked in and he said, "It's over." And I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "It's gone." And I said, "Forever?" And he said, "Today, go back and live your life." And that's what I did. I came back to London. I was I'd had my 40th birthday party with Evelyn Lauder, Pamela Fury and Rosemary Bravo. I was bald and they filled my hotel room with balloons, and that's how I turned 40. And I remember thinking, I'm never going to make 50. I'm never going to live proper life again. And I came back to London and I felt this amazing sense of freedom. But what I hadn't told anyone is the chemo had taken my sense of smell.
Oh my word.
And I hadn't told anyone. And so I came back and I made the decision. I didn't feel part of the business with Lauder anymore. And it wasn't anything to do with them. Someone had told me I was going to die and I had to fight for my life. And I changed. And I thought, if I can't smell, I make myself a fraud. So I resigned and I walked away from that business knowing that I had a 5-year lockout. And then 2 weeks after I left and I walked away, I woke up one morning and my sense of smell had come back.
Good grief. Had you told Leonard or Evelyn about your sense of smell?
No, I hadn't told anyone. Not even Gary. No.
Wow. No, I hadn't told anyone. You mentioned there about being in your hotel room and where you referred there to the fact that you were bald. So, so many women struggle with this. And I know people who, I suppose men in particular, struggle with this idea that anybody would really care when such a huge thing is happening to your health about something as inconsequential as hair. But of course, most women will understand that that can be a very, very, very big thing. It's a loss of privacy in a way, isn't it? Because you're, you know, the rest of the world can see that you're not very well. Tell me how it made you feel and your experience of it.
You feel your identity disappears. You feel kind of as though, I felt ashamed that I had cancer. The baldness just, I hated being bald. My son actually buzzed all my hair off. I didn't let chemo take that. I buzzed it off before. But then I woke up one morning, I think after the third chemo, and it was coming out just in handfuls, and I sobbed and sobbed. And I wore a Sex and the City baseball cap through the whole time of my chemo. I refused to wear a wig because they were itchy. And I got, but I got through
so
it.
So hot.
And, but the thing is, you don't just lose your hair. You lose your hair on your body, your eyebrows, your eyelashes. So every piece of dirt that's, you know, is picked up by the wind in the street gets in your eye. You, yeah. And, you know, it is, your nails go funny. Your teeth feel very tender. So it's all of these things. And you feel like just eroding and draining away. But what I've kept reminding myself is I'm fighting for my life. I'm going to beat this. And every day, no matter how bad I felt, I'm going to beat this. I'm going to come out of this. And, you know, that morning when I did, and that morning flying back to London, I remember landing in London. I hadn't been home for over almost 18 months. And I remember getting on the floor, kissing the ground. And I, that first moment of walking in my home and the smell of my home, I don't know, it was just magical. I felt so safe again.
And did it change your relationship with your body, having seen it and felt it go through all of that, the surgery and all of that? Did you come out feeling differently, more respectful, more worried for your body?
No,
how did
I wasn't,
it change?
I wasn't any of those things. I mean, I'd had a mastectomy and was then reconstructed. Mm-hmm. But it's funny, I wasn't allowed a manicure and pedicure or anything like that because for fear of infection. So the first time I was through my first manicure and pedicure, oh my God, I loved it. And my feet, and I went out, I never forget, I went to Prada and bought myself a handbag, which I have today. It's my bag. And I bought a biker's jacket from Donna Karan. And of course, my hair was just coming back. It was buzz cut. And I walked in and this man said to me, I love that look, that you look so chic. And no one had said that to me, you know, but for a long time. And I certainly didn't feel that. And I just said, really? And I said to him, I've just fought cancer. And he said, I can't see that. All I can see is a woman that loves life. And it was so kind and gentle. And whether he was telling the truth or not, I don't know. But oh, I still got the biker's jacket and I still got the handbag and I still got my biker's boots. And they remind me that, you know, beauty comes in many forms. I don't regret having a mastectomy and reconstruction at all because it took the worry away that it would come back.
Yeah, for sure. And so having regained your sense of smell but already exited the business and left it in the hands of a VLC, this massive, massive, massive business at this point, so you go back to almost civilian life. What happens when temporarily, but you don't know that yet, what happens when you go from being a very big deal to having to sit down and regroup and take a moment and think, have I lost my status? What do I do next? Did that impact your confidence? Or are you somebody who just always feels excited?
No, I lost all confidence. And that's when anxiety, because I realize it's not a job or a career to me. It was my best friend, and creating fragrance is who I am.
Yeah.
And it's not just about my personal identity. I feel fulfilled as a person. I learned a lot about myself in those 5 years because I had a lockout, so I couldn't enter the industry. Rightly so. I've been paid a lot of money. I mean, absolutely, sure. They had to. But I became very anxious. I just didn't know who I was anymore. And yes, I was very wealthy, but money doesn't make you happy. All it does is give you choice and opportunity. It does. Money allows you to go left or right. But it's certainly, for me, I needed to work, and I tried to find other things to do until the point where I realized almost to the day when that 5 years was up, it was like, I've got to try again. I've got to see if I can build again. I've got to see if I could do it. And from that very first moment I had the idea, it was to build a global brand. It was never, let's just do a little perfumery and sit on the corner and make nice fragrances. It was like, no, I've had a taste of what it is to be global, and I want to go back there and see if I can do it again.
I'm so interested in that because I think, because of the job I do, lots of people assume that my self-esteem, my confidence is wrapped up in how I look. And it never, ever, ever has been my whole life. But what I do know is that my self-esteem is completely wrapped up in in my work. And I think it's the kind of unspoken thing for lots of us that if the work isn't there. And if it's just me, myself, and I, or you, yourself, and you, that one can feel at sea as though one's identity is lost. And I'm really interested that, well, I'm respectful of the fact that you can see that that's where you were. And actually, you weren't prepared to have a little cottage industry because you didn't need the money, right? You didn't need to launch Joe Loves, but actually you did need to launch Joe Loves for yourself.
Well, I did need to launch Joe Loves because I didn't want to get to the end of my life and think, I wonder what would have happened. And honestly,
yeah,
the first 2 years of building Joe Loves were excruciatingly difficult. Now, when I look back on it and the adventure, I'm just about to live the biggest adventure of my life in the next 2 years. I would never be here. And the people I've met, the things I've done, I don't believe I would have been that person if I'd stayed with Lauder and Jo Malone London. I think I would have been a very different person. Honestly, this very moment today, I feel like I'm the young 30-year-old woman again. I feel like I'm about to have this moment in my life. Like kids have gap years, I'm having that moment in my life where I'm not leaving work or doing anything like that, but the excitement of adventure. What else is out there? What else can I do? And building Joe Loves has enabled me to see that anything is possible. It's not always easy, and it's not without its problems, but it is possible. And when you get to that point in your mindset where you think, what would I really love to do? What really makes me happy? And you can strip everything away from me. I'm talking about in business now, not family. As long as I can create fragrance for the rest of my life, I'll be happy. I know that. But I love business. I love building and creating and seeing things grow because it changes your life, but it also changes the people around you. You know, my team, when I look at them, they're all, and most of them are women. They're starting to look at you know what we're doing and thinking, oh my God, this is the most amazing adventure and we're living it. And good things when they happen to you are to be shared with the right people.
It's a beautiful brand, both in terms of its personal fragrance and its home fragrance. It's such a lovely brand. What have you done at Joe Loves that you are most creatively proud of? So outside of the business, what's the bit that has really turned you on and made you feel great about the output of Joe Loves?
I love the Tapas Bar because that was the first thing that changed the world. And I think the paintbrush is
smart.
The thing that is our like a Willy Wonka golden ticket around the world. And I was in the shop yesterday and the woman from the Far East came in and bought 20 paintbrushes. And I just said to her, and she said, it's the most brilliant product I've ever seen. And I think I'm most proud of that because I was the only person in our company to believe in the idea at that time. And I remember being told that it was gimmicky and no one would ever buy into it. And I'm proud that I stood up for what my gut instinct told me and that entrepreneurial kind of side. And it taught me something in business that, you know, I am the matriarch of this business. And in a funny way, I'm part of a matriarch in the other one as well. And I have to hold, and sometimes I'm the only person in the room to believe something, but you have to hold on to it and you have to push it through. And if it goes wrong, you have to accept responsibility. And if it goes right, share the celebration with others. So the paintbrush was definitely a big learning curve and is probably our most successful product worldwide at the moment.
I mean, it's a genius product. For anyone listening who isn't familiar with it, it's a clicky paintbrush that dispenses a fragrance gel so that you have this compact perfume that you can take with you anywhere. Lots of your fragrances, including at Jo Malone London, but especially now in Joe Loves, are based in this kind of love of cuisine, in this love of food ingredients. There are fragrances in Joe Loves that just feel sort of juicy. You know, you smell them and your mouth waters. And I know that's been really important to you. So how does that carry over into your actual diet? Are you a food lover?
Oh, I love food. So if I didn't do fragrance, I would definitely be involved with food. I'm so greedy. I mean, I love food. I've been out, we've got 10 people for dinner tonight, and I just love cooking for people. I like simple food. I don't like fussy food at all. I like really good, simple food, but making it really taste delicious. So, but when I create my fragrances, I'm telling you stories of my life. So pomelo is Turks and Caicos. smoke plum and leather is riding Josie, my beautiful horse, in the mountains in Montana. Mango and Thai Lime is New York City. And that's a really juicy one, isn't it?
Yeah.
And so I'm telling you stories of things I feel, places I've been. It's like a photo album for your nose. And I've been working this morning. I'm working on something at the moment, which is such a different note to anything I've worked on. And I feel when I'm working with a note, I love that moment where it's just the fragrance and me, and we're the only two identities that know it exists. The rest of the world has no idea. And then my job is to nurture it into a finished fragrance and bring it to the world. And it makes me feel alive. It makes me feel purposeful. And then when the fragrance off it goes and it finds its own way and grows up, you know, I'm just that proud mum, I suppose. I don't want to look at fragrance or business in a different way. I don't want 5-year strategies. I know that we have to have them, but that's not part of what I do. That's part of what Gary and Catherine do and make it all a plan. But I love the heartbeat of creativity, and it makes me happy, you know, when I create.
Skin and Me, our brilliant sponsor here on Beyond the Bathroom, is a subscription skincare service tailored to provide exactly what your skin needs. Each month, you'll receive a personalised dermatologist-designed solution packed with wonderful active ingredients you can't buy over-the-counter, delivered in a metered dispenser called the Daily Doser. I can vouch personally for both the service and the doser because I myself have been a paying Skin and Me subscriber for almost 2 years, and I wouldn't be without it. It takes around 12 weeks to reveal your best skin. Whether your goal is to banish breakouts, soften fine lines, ditch the foundation, or you want a great-looking base for makeup, see what you can achieve when you introduce actives into your nightly routine. Beyond the Bathroom listeners can trial their first month of Skin and Me for just £3.50. Just use the code Sally Hughes. That's SalliHughes.
Is that, I always ask my guests, what is their kind of Skin and Me moment? When are they happiest in their skin? Would that be your moment, that kind of private conversation you're having with a fledgling fragrance?
It's creativity, definitely, because I feel I can conquer the world. When I smell that smell, I see the end goal straight away. I see what it visually looks like. I know what it needs to be called. I hear its voice. And I feel this unbelievable sense of global domination with creativity. And I feel excited for the adventure.
And finally, Jo Malone, CBE. Do you like who you see when you look in the mirror?
Yeah, I do. I'm proud. I do like what I see. I'm proud of what I see. And I just look at my reflection and I think, if only at 11 years old, I could have had a conversation with you, I would have told you it's going to be okay. And just enjoy your life, because you've got great adventures ahead of you.
Well, you certainly did have great adventures ahead of you. I'm so grateful to you for coming to share them with me. It was just really, really great to talk.
Oh, that was lovely.
That's it for this episode. Please subscribe and follow Beyond the Bathroom wherever you get your podcasts. And if you enjoy the show, please leave a rating and a review. And I will see you next time. Bye.
Insanity Group.